Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response in the day for the 22nd of Adar. And today we're going to be responsible. She's responsible by Rav Bezalel Stern. B'tshut b'tzel ha-chochma, who I include every so often. I'm not sure he's in our Bar Ilan, so he's clearly a respondent of some standing, but is also a distant relative of mine, and that's why I occasionally take the opportunity to learn from him as well. In B'tzel ha-chochma, 4th volume, Siman Samach Bet, the 62nd responsum, Rav Bezalel Stern was asked about the horidat zevel min hadira b'shabbat, El Martef Habayit. The question was, in big apartment buildings in Brooklyn, in this description, in this response, they would throw their garbage down a chute, as in many apartment buildings. Now, it used to be that that would go straight into an incinerator, and that was going to be a different problem that we don't have to talk about here, because it wasn't true anymore. So that would have been a problem. That will be a problem because it might be part of our Marit Ayin question, whether it will look to other people like we're doing something wrong, because to throw things into an incinerator is like burning them, and that would be a problem. But here the question is going to focus much more on the Amir al-Akum issue, on the question of whether we're not asking non-Jews to act for us on Shabbat in prohibited ways. The way that it worked in this particular building, and so each building would have to ask this question separately depending on their procedures. But in this particular building, you would throw the garbage down a chute in a bag and whatever, and then the non-Jewish workers would take that garbage and they would... They put it into a machine that would put it into special bags. So I'm not sure what that means. It might mean they put it into a trash compactor, and then after it was compacted, we put it in special bags. But the point is that whatever they're going to put it into is a machine that you can't run on Shabbat, that a Jew could not run on Shabbat. So the question is that going to be a problem of Amir al-Akum? Are we not implicitly asking the non-Jews to do something for us on Shabbat, and then isn't that a problem? Then after it goes in those special bags, then the sanitation workers for the city come and they clean it away to a place where they will incinerate it. Now, the man asking the question had lots of reasons to think that would be a problem. One problem was he thought it might be called an uvda dechol. We're not here in this response. We're going to discuss uvda dechol completely. We'll get a little bit about it. But uvda dechol is a basic idea that on Shabbat, we're not supposed to act in ways that we ordinarily that characterize weekday activity. Of course, the definition of that will be important as to what is considered that, right? We eat on during the week and we eat on Shabbat, but nobody thinks that eating is an uvda dechol. So Rav Bezalel Hirschman will speak a little about it and point out to us that he wrote a longer piece on it, but we're not going to see that longer piece today. That was another issue that was up. So you have the problem of Amir al-Akum, of asking non-Jews to violate Shabbat for us. We have a problem of uvda dechol. Then the person asking the question thought it might be grumma. We might be sort of causing the machine to work. Now, we're not causing the machine to work because we're not putting anything in the machine, but maybe by the fact that we're dumping the garbage and the building's workers know that the garbage that gets dumped has to be put into the machine, then by us having them do it or just implying them they need to do it, maybe it's all like we are starting the machine. That's another part of his question. Then Amir al-Akum, as we said. And then also, is there a problem perhaps of Marit Ayin? Because it hasn't been so long ago by the time this question is asked. And this question, the response is dated the 22nd of Adar on Tafshin Lamed Vav of 1976. So in 1976, it had not been so long ago that buildings had incinerators and that throwing something down the chute on Shabbat was like dumping it into the incinerator itself. And is that not a Marit Ayin problem? People will see what I'm doing and they'll assume that I am violating Shabbat and don't have to be a problem with that as well. Most of the responses will deal with the question of Amir al-Akum. What are we allowed or not allowed to ask or tell or request of non-Jews on Shabbat? Right? The basic problem is the Chazal didn't want us just, you know, living in Shabbat as if it wasn't Shabbat by hiring a non-Jew to do everything for us. So we're not allowed to ask non-Jews to violate Shabbat for us. But the definition of for us is a question. So Vishal Stern opens up by saying it would seem like throwing the garbage down into the basement, into that compactor room, basically, is an implicit command or request or demand or suggestion to the non-Jewish workers. They do everything they ordinarily do with garbage. Now, that's right, daily. And the reason for that, I think, is that his claim is, right, theoretically you could say it's not true. I'm just throwing it down to the garbage room, and whatever they want to do with it, they want to do with it. And I don't mind if they would wait till Sunday to do it, right? If you told me their garbage compacting schedule would be weekdays every day, but weekends just one day because we're the short half or whatever. I don't care. That's fine with me. So therefore, you might say it's not really Amirela Akum. You could say, well, I'm not asking to do anything. I'm just putting it there, and whenever he gets to it, he gets to it. And that's his choice as to when he gets to it. Rosalstein does not take it that way. He thinks that it's true that by dropping it there, since I know, and this is what his answer is, since I know that their practice is they do it every day, that if anything comes, they do it every day, then my putting it down there is like a hint or more. It's even more explicit than a hint that I expect them to deal with it, because that's the way it goes. And even though it's true, he says, even though it's true that the Jew doesn't care if it stays there until after Shabbos, but since the non-Jewish worker, it's his job and his supervisors will require of him that whenever garbage comes down, and this is because you don't want the compact room smelling and stuff like that, so whenever garbage comes down, it's his job to take care of it, so therefore you have to count it that way. Now that's an interesting halakhic claim as to what counts as telling somebody to do something or not. It says that if we know that people do X and they're required to do X by their job, then the fact that we set up the circumstances in which they're required to do X for Rizal Stern, that counts as Amir al-Akum. A similar example he suggests is there's a Taz in a Magen Avram in Shin Zion in Shulchan Aruch and Or HaChaim, Shin Zion 307, their small paragraph 3, about in terms of, let's say you ask a non-Jew to buy something for you, and that item is only available on Shabbat. So they agree that that's considered like saying, please go buy it for me on Shabbat, and therefore it's not allowed. And Sol Stern says, and that's the same thing here, by the virtue of putting garbage in the chute, and the non-Jew has the job to make sure to get rid of it, then it's like doing that. So the first case is one worth pausing over for a second as well, that people don't always remember. Right? I remember years ago somebody asked me about, you know, there are auctions of various sorts, antiques, cars, various sorts that only happen on Shabbat. So the question comes up, can I send a non-Jew and say, listen, buy me whatever it is if it comes up? And I'm not telling them to do it on Shabbos. If they want to buy it another day, then that's fine too. But if it's the kind of thing that's only available on Shabbat and there's a wink-wink arrangement, that's a problem. That's a problem of Amir al-Akum. And so the Vital Stern and the Vital Chochma is saying that that's true of dropping the garbage as well. Although, he then says, the Taz and the Magen Avraham themselves is not so clear because there's another source, and it's going to be an important source, Sefer called Sefer Shir Knesset HaGdolah, which was an important halachic source, tells the story of the Ra'anach, who was an important rabbinic authority. And it came up one time, or maybe it came up a few times, that he wanted a sefer, let's say Friday night, he wanted a sefer, and it was in a room, and he hadn't left a light in that room. Right? These are candlelight times, not electric light times, candlelight times. So if you make a light, you'd have to light a fire, which is not allowed on Shabbat. And he wanted to go into the room and find the sefer. He didn't know exactly where it was. He couldn't get it in the dark. And what he did was, in such situations, is he would ask his maid, his non-Jewish worker in the house, to bring him an object that was in that same room. She would go to find the object, and then she would light a candle because she couldn't see. So, and then he would follow her, and when she lit the candle, he would see the sefer that he needed, and he would see the book that he needed, and he would get it as well. That was his view. So he apparently assumes, we'll come back to this, but he apparently assumes that that doesn't qualify as Amir al-Akum for some reason. We'll have to figure out why that should be different. It's clear to everybody that he could not have said to her, please light the candle for me, I need to find a sefer. So the Morgzia, Rav Yaakov Emdin, didn't like that story. He said, why is that different? That's just hinting to her to open the, to turn on, to light a candle. And we don't generally think, and this is something people don't know and they don't realize, we don't generally think that hinting to a non-Jew to perform a prohibited Shabbos action for us is allowed. We don't think that. We think that it's not allowed. So why is this any better? It's not even allowed, says Rav Yaakov Emdin, to set up a situation where the non-Jew understands on his own what the Jew needs and does what the Jew needs. That's also a problem, says Rav Yaakov Emdin, and then I think we generally agree. And therefore, he doesn't understand how the Ra'anach did what he did, and he thinks that in those situations, and the Jew is not allowed to benefit from that malacha. So this is a hard question that comes up, unfortunately, a lot, and people don't know the halachot sometimes, or the people that I see anyway, don't know the halachot as well as they should. They don't understand what is and isn't allowed with not having a non-Jewish worker on Shabbat, work for us on Shabbat, so, and what we can and can't get benefit from. It's not just that we can't ask them this, it's that even after it happens, we might not be allowed to benefit from it. So therefore, he doesn't know how the Ra'anach did it. And he says, and this story of the Ranach, I don't know why there's any leniency there. And then Sol Stern quotes other poskim who agreed with the Marksia, with Rav Yaakov Hemdin, and so they had a problem with it. But the Prima Gadim quotes the Shira Knesset Agdola, and he supports it. And he says, it's, you know, the part of this is about being respectful to our predecessors. The Ranach thought it was okay. You have to figure out a way that it's somewhat okay, otherwise it's, you're saying, oh, he got it totally wrong. You don't want to say that. So, especially since he acted on it, it's not just like he wrote it in a book, right? There's two different ways that ideas come. I'm writing a sefer, or I'm learning a gemara, right? And I'm writing notes on it, and then I eventually publish the notes, and I have a sefer, and I come to a certain conclusion. So that's one level of believing in things, and that's a very important level. But it's even more so, especially for great Torah scholars, if they act on it. Because if they act on it, it means they become so confident and comfortable with their perspective that they are very sure that this is the right thing. So if the Ranach was willing to do it, then, and the Sheirik and Esedek Dola are going to quote it, and the Prima Gadim supports it, so then the Sol Stern says, we have to figure out. So he says, I think, even though I'm not, obviously not worthy, he says, of explaining, I think that there's a difference in the cases that you don't see. And that he thinks the Ranach is right, is clearly right, because there's a paragraph in Shulchan Aruch says that if a man says to his slave to go with him and to light a candle, and then the slave or the worker lit a candle to see, that's not good. And the reason that's not good is because it's not really for the slave, for the non-Jewish worker's benefit. Meaning, let's say I'm going to go into a room, and I know the room is dark, and I say, okay, come with me. I'm walking into a room. I just want to walk into the room, and I'm going to hang out. And we walk in, and we sit down, and the non-Jew lights a candle. So I brought him with me for no particular reason other than I wanted him with me, and I wanted him to notice there was no light, and I wanted him to light the light. That's a problem. That's why today sometimes we'll like offer cake and coffee, and they'll insist that the non-Jew comes in, because then the non-Jew, if there's a light off, they won't on or something like that, because then the non-Jew is doing it for his purposes. And that's the goal that we're getting to. And so the Shulchan Aruch said is that fabricating a reason for the non-Jew's presence that will then lead the non-Jew to turn on the light, if there's no reason for the non-Jew's presence other than the Jew wants him there so that he'll notice the light is off and turn it on, that's a problem. And then not only is it a problem in terms of that you're not allowed to do it, once the light is on, you're not allowed to benefit from it. But says Rabbi Sol Stern, if you notice the Mishnah Berurah there, he says that that's only if the non-Jew went with the Jew. But if the Jew sent the non-Jew to go someplace, and then when they went to that room, you know, they turned on the light in that room for themselves, so that's not for the Jew, because the Jew wasn't there when they did it, even though it's true that the Jew sent them there. So in those situations, since the Jew wasn't there at the time, that hadlaka, that lighting of candles, is considered permissible and even permissible to the Jew after the fact. And the Tzaddik says something similar, for example, that if I ask a non-Jewish worker of mine to wash dishes, so, and she turns on a candle, she lights a candle, right? The kitchen's dark, and I've cleared all the dishes, but I want the dishes washed for the next day. I say, could you wash the dishes? And wash the dishes, there was nothing wrong with that halakhically, because they were going to use cold water, and so that part was okay, but she lights a candle, so who'd she light the candle for? So, even though it's true, in some sense, she lit it for the Jew, because the Jew wants her to wash the dishes, since she's washing the dishes herself, and she needs the candle, then that's good enough, even if the Jew uses the light afterwards. But if I went into the kitchen, for example, and I started washing the dishes, and the non-Jew came in and saw what I was doing and just wanted to help me and lit the candle, that would be a big problem of Milakum, but I wouldn't be allowed to get benefit from that candle light. But if I sent the non-Jew to do something, and then they went, they did it, and they, in doing it, it was good for them to turn the light, that's a light that we can make use of, because that light was lit explicitly for them. So that's an important question in Amir Akum that we always have to keep track of. I'm not sure. I've seen people who don't know this important distinction between where the non-Jew is doing it for us, whether or not we explicitly tell them to, whether or not we hint it, whether or not they figure it out on themselves, if they do it for us, it's a big problem. If we can engineer it that they're doing it for themselves, even though it might seem like a legal fiction, and maybe it is in some senses, but to the extent that we can engineer it, they're doing it for themselves, then it's allowed. And that was the case with the Ranach, because by virtue of sending her ahead of time, right, the worker, to find something in the room, he wasn't asking her to light it for him. It wasn't like she saw him in the room looking around for a safer and lit it for him. She needed something from the room. Now, he had done that. That's okay, because once he asks her to do something, and on her way to do that thing that she's now required to do, she decides to do something that a Jew couldn't do on Shabbat, like a candle, that's considered, that is defined halakhically, she did it for herself, and that's what the Ranak was, you know, clever enough or aware enough to know how to do. Then, Rav Sal Shulman says, though, that while all that's true, I don't think he steps back from that. He notes, though, that when the Prima Gaon, the Shir Knesset Gedolah, quoted, they quoted in Shin Zayin, which is the Siman, which is the section of Shulchan Aruch that talks about whether we can benefit from the actions of the non-Jew on Shabbat, they do quote it in Shin Zayin, not in Resh Ayin Vav. In Resh Ayin Vav would be the question of how, whether or not you could benefit from the light. So when it's in Shin Zayin, it's coming to tell us not that we can benefit from the light, that's a question, but it's telling us more than that. Not only can we benefit from the light, but we can actually tell them to do it in that situation. So clearly, right, if we want to figure out if you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to do that, clearly if there's enough light in the room, they could have found it. Right? Sometimes the lights aren't dim, or there's enough ambient light, let's say moonlight is coming through the window, or there's enough light from the lit rooms that if you wanted to, you could have found the item without turning on the light. And let's say if you were Jewish and had nobody around to help you, and you need to find something, you'd walk into the room, you'd stumble around a bit, and you'd find it, right? You know, let's say sometimes you're looking for clothing in a closet. The closet is dark enough that it's not simple to find it, but you could find the clothing. So if it was that kind of light, and then the non-Jew just turned on the light because they wanted more light, they wanted to make it easy on themselves, that's obviously okay, because there, my asking them to go find me something, in fact, doesn't itself imply that they're going to turn on the light, because they could do it without turning on the light, they just chose to turn on the light. But our point is that we're talking about even the fact that you couldn't find it without the light. So you can always theoretically find it without the light, because you can take items out one by one from the room to where it's light. But normal people won't do that. And therefore, even though it's clearly true that by sending her into this room, she's going to turn on the light, and you might have thought that that would count as Amir al-Aqam, I'm asking her, I'm implicitly telling her to turn on the light, we don't count it that way. That if since the action I'm telling her to do, or I'm asking her to do, I'm expecting her to do, is itself a Shabbos okay action, please go bring me the plate that's in that room that's part of this set. But, and the fact that I know that she's going to turn on the light, that doesn't matter to me, and it's allowed, and that's the placement point. It's not only allowed to get benefit when she turns the light, that would be in Reish Ayin Vav. But they put it in Shin Zayin to tell us that not only is allowed to get benefit from the light, you're allowed to actually ask the non-Jew to do it in that sense. Since you're not telling him or asking him or her to turn on the light. So that would mean that you can do it. Then he suggests it might even be that it's telling you, you might have tried to say, no, we're only talking about a case where you might have thought it's only about a case where she could theoretically have found it without the light. Turning on the light, then she turned on the light. But the point is to tell us just that even an important perky person like the Ranak was willing to rely on this to make use of the light after the fact, theoretically. But that's not what Salshan really thinks. He really thinks that that since the bringing is a milta de hetera, the bringing of the item is itself allowed, and if there was a light in that room, nobody would question our right to ask her to go bring me something. Right? Let's say there's light on the room and the sefer is the only book on the desk. So he said there, listen, can you bring me the book from the desk? Everybody agrees that would be okay. So if you could do it without a light, but it's hard to mention the light, that's okay. That would be a chedesh that you can do that, and that's considered amir al-akum. And then he goes a step further after thinking about it. And he says, no, he thinks that the principle here is that a Jew is allowed to ask a non-Jew on Shabbat to do something for the Jew, even though that to get there, the non-Jew will be forced to do something that's prohibited. But that's only when the prohibited thing, yasena litzorcho velo litzorch Yisrael, for his own needs and not for the Jew's needs. So that's a hard category, because the definition of that can be very difficult. You know, if I said to a Jew, to a non-Jew, listen, I want you, in a place where there's an Erev, let's say, I want you to go to the pharmacy and bring me the prescription that's there waiting for me, right? So let's suppose the pharmacy is 2 miles away. So if I said to the non-Jew, listen, I want you to go to the pharmacy and bring it back for me and have it here within 10 minutes, so then I'm really asking the non-Jew to get into a car and drive, or take a taxi, or whatever it is, and drive and go there. And so therefore, I'm asking him, at the same moment, I'm asking him to do something for me. Saul Stern is thinking about the case, the good example is the case of the Ranach, right? I'm asking her to do something permissible, bring me an item, even though I'm confident that when she needs to bring me the item, instead of taking every item out of the room, looking at what it is, going back to the room, putting it back in its place, in it, she'll turn on the light. So where there's something that I'm asking the non-Jew to do that is itself permissible, but I can be confident that the non-Jew will do what for us is a Shabbos violation on the way, that revulsionist thing does not count as a mibul ak. When it comes up in lots and lots of circumstances, we'll stick with the one here because that's one in his... In his response, he gives one more example. Sorry, it's the same example. The Shulchan Aruch says it about where you don't go with him at all. That certainly, right, let's say the Ranach's case, instead of going just right behind her to find his own sefer, he had sent her. She had gone, brought him the item, and never bothered extinguishing the candle because she didn't care because it's a candle, it's already lit. That's it. And she left it on. That the Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, you can go into the room after that. So that's clear, and that's what we're talking about. That would be true in other situations as well. So when it comes to the throwing the garbage down the chute, you might have said to yourself, well, you know, the job of the non-Jew was really only to put the garbage into a bag, and putting garbage into a bag doesn't violate Shabbat. But so therefore, you theoretically said the fact that he puts it in the compactor first, that's his business, not my business. But that's not the way Rav Saul Stern comes down on it. He ends up thinking that, no, that when you throw garbage down a chute in a building where you know the procedure, then the garbage hitting the compact room floor coming down the chute is like an explicit asking of the non-Jew to do all the things they ordinarily do with that garbage. And since part of that is putting into a machine and that's impermissible on Shabbat, he thinks that that's a problem. Even though you might have argued that the garbage becomes hefker, it's not owned by the Jew anymore. Where once the Jew throws garbage down a chute, he doesn't want it anymore. You might have thought it's like just saying, I don't have anything to do with this. But it's not true, because we're not allowed to ask or tell or imply it to non-Jews that they should do something that for us would be violated on Shabbat, even if we have no ownership of it. The example is, the Shulchan Aruch says in Shin Zayin, you can't tell, stand still to a non-Jew, here, take this meat and cook it for yourself. And you mean you have to cook it for yourself, even if that's a non-Jew who you don't have any obligations food-wise. I don't have to support this non-Jew. It's not like I owe him food support or anything like that. But nonetheless, you're not allowed to say it, because we're not allowed to tell or ask or order or imply strongly that we expect non-Jews to do things that for us would be violations of Shabbat. So he thinks that's a problem. And he has it elsewhere in B'tel Chachma as well. So that would be an issue for Jews who live in a building like that. You have to figure it out. Meaning if the non-Jews in the building don't put in the trash compactor every day, let's say all they do is they take the white garbage bags, the white small garbage bags that people have, and they always put them into big greenish garbage bags, which cover the smell, and then, you know, once a week they put them into the compactor. So that might be more allowed. But so each building situation would have to be different. You have to figure it out. But that's what his argument is. His argument is, if you know that every time they see garbage in the compactor, now let's say they do it sometime that day. But you don't know what time that day. But let's say you said to them, do you know what time today you're doing it? And they said, I'm doing it at 6. And Shabbos goes out at 4:30 or 5 o'clock. You'd be allowed to. So all these things are part of this. But fundamentally, he thinks that there's an Amir al-Akum issue here. There's an asking and you to do work for us on Shabbat issue that we have to be aware of. That's the issue that he does think continues to be a problem. But the other issues the man raised, he dispenses with and doesn't really think they're a problem. So in terms of Ovdu D'chol, right, he says it's like how we act all throughout the week, isn't it like an Uvdin Dechol? So Vital Stern says, I don't think it qualifies as an Uvdin Dechol, because there's a Chivas HaRamam that's quoted by the Magen Avraham and Machzis HaShekel, that when we talk about Uvdin Dechol, what we mean is something where you have to worry about that it's a violation of a biblical commandment. It's a way that I act during the week that looks like a biblical commandment. That would be an Uvdin Dechol. So let's suppose for a second, as I think we generally assume the halacha, that driving a car violates an Isser drive, actually driving a car violates an Isser Torah, biblical commandment of Shabbat, however it works. You know, let's assume for a second, to make it easier, I don't think this is true, but let's assume for a second that it's the turning on of the car that's the biblical commandment, but the driving of the car would not be necessarily a biblical commandment. So let's say there's a reason why I can find a car that I'm allowed to drive on Shabbos completely. I create a Shabbos car. But since driving a car generally involves a Torah prohibition, so that would be called an Uvdin Dechol. It's I'm doing something on Shabbat, and even though I'm doing it in a way that's permissible, since it involves Isser Torah, since it involves Torah violations, it's a problem. So that's what an Uvdin Dechol, the Rambam says in the Tshuva. Tiferet Yisrael, which is an important commentary on the Mishnah, suggested that the standards for something qualifying as an Uvdin Dechol were, it's either Doma Ksat Lachat Min Lametet Melachot, it looks a little bit like one of the biblical prohibited forms of created labor, or it's a place where Chazal He says, Beruach Kodesham, with their, you know, divine spirit, with their great insight, understood that it would be easy, that it would tip over into an Isidore, right, into a biblical prohibition. So it doesn't have to look like a biblical prohibition, but it can lead to it quickly. That would be an Ubda Dechol. It would be too much of a weekday activity to be allowed on Shabbat. Or a Davar Shehu Torah Gadol, or just a lot of work. I mean, all people working on Shabbat, and therefore we call that an Ubda Dechol, right? So, you know, you want to move your wooden planks from one place to the other in your house, from your basement to your attic, or your attic to your basement. That's an Ubda Dechol, just because, not because there's a malacha involved, not because there's a prohibited Shabbos activity involved, but just because it's too much work in the colloquial sense of work. It's too much effort, too much expansion of effort for us to allow on Shabbat. The Or HaChaim had suggested in one's house, when nobody else is seeing it, then it wouldn't be considered an Ubda Dechol, which would imply that Ubda Dechol is not only about you, about it for the individual, but about the impact it has on those around him. So that would be another way of getting out of saying it here. So here, where it's not an Ubda Dechol because the person throwing it down the chute is just sort of throwing something in the chute, it's nothing, and the problem is the Amir La'akum problem. The problem is that you're asking non-Jews to do stuff for you. So that wouldn't be, and the Jew himself, there's no real way in which you, there's no scenario in which it's going to turn into a Shabbos violation for the Jew himself, at a Torah level for sure, then there's no Ubda Dechol problem. Then he says he has a whole kutras called Din Ubda Dechol, but that's not the place for it now, and we'll just leave it as well. Another issue of grama. The man had said grama. So grama is this idea in halacha that sometimes things that we cause are on our account as well. Even though we only caused it, we didn't do it, it nonetheless counts against or towards our accounts with Hashem anyway. So it's sort of like this machine in the basement, which is going to, I think it's a trash compactor, is going to be moving and working because something I did. I threw the garbage down the chute. The non-Jew is going to pick it up from down the chute and throw it in the trash compactor. So since it's almost automatic, it's part of the non-Jew's job, doesn't that mean I'm sort of like causing the machine to work? So Rav Salzman says, no, he doesn't think that's what grama is. The garbage that I throw down falls onto the floor of the compactor room. And then, when it's there, the non-Jew picks it up, so that's a person intervening. So a person intervening is a separate cause. And therefore, that doesn't count as an Ubda Dechol, as a grama, as me causing something. It's me putting, I'm putting the conditions into place for something to happen. But that doesn't count, that's not qualified in halacha as grama. Grama is when I do something and as a consequences, an outcome of my action, then an event occurs. That's grama. But here where I do something and then a person comes in between, that's not going to be grama. That's not going to be an issue for me of causation. And then in terms of Mishum Marit Ayin, he says that there's a Taz in Magen Avraham. Taz is in Shin Lamed Vav. Magen Avraham is Shin Aleph Nun Vav. Who quoted Tosos that when they're only going to suspect me of an Isser Derabbanan, of a rabbinic prohibition, then in private, there's no Marit Ayin. So Marit Ayin is a problem of people are going to see me and they think I'm going to violate the Torah and I'm not allowed to do those actions, right? The classic example I was learning growing up was you go into a McDonald's just to buy a soda. Isn't that Marit Ayin? Because people are going to think you're eating McDonald's. Whether or not that's true, the problem is that Marit Ayin is also generally assumed to occur even bechadre chadarim, even in one's privacy of one's house when nobody's seeing you. So I'm going to go to the trash compactor, trash chute. There's nobody else in the hallway. There's nobody seeing me. There's no cameras. Nobody's going to see me. So the Taz and Magen Avraham say that if there's nobody to see me, anyway, it's Qadri Chadarim, I'm in private, and the action that I'm doing could only maximum involve people suspecting me of violating a rabbinic prohibition, then Marit Ayin doesn't apply. I don't have to worry about it. So the this is machloket about it among the Achronim. It's not clear that that's true, that we accept that Taz and Magen Avraham, but Saul Stern thinks that this is a kind of activity that only happens within one's home. So there's generally not other people around that he thinks that it's okay and you don't have to worry about it. And he points out the Maharsha says that we shouldn't add cases of Marit Ayin. There are cases of the Gemara of Marit Ayin. Those are the cases that we should follow. We shouldn't add more, and therefore he thinks it's not an issue. So most of the issues that came up, he think were okay, and he would have allowed throwing the compactor, the trash down the chute. But the one big problem was that if it's well known that as soon as the trash comes down the chute, that the non-Jew will switch it to the machine, to the compactor machine, and it's daily, then you have a problem. So Jews living in a building like that would have to figure out other ways to handle it. They could find a way to get a dispensation. They could mark their garbage cans, bags ahead of time and ask the non-Jews not to put there are lots of ways you can get around them. You just have to know that it's an issue of Amir La'akum. Along the way, Rabbi Salzman has helped us understand issues of Amir La'akum, issues of what we are and aren't allowed to tell or ask non-Jews on Shabbat, issues of grama, what's considered causation, issues of Marit Ayin, of what people see us and what lessons they can learn from it, and issues of Ubda Dechol, and that is a responsive day for the 22nd of Adar. Have a great day.